welcome one and all to a very special Nerds on the Rocks feature. We are starting our Marvel Cinematic Universe recap series as we head to Avengers Age of Ultron this May. Joining me this week is Scott.
Hey, everybody.
And Tony.
What is up, people?
So for this series, we're going to do what we did with when The Amazing Spider-Man 2 was coming out and The Man of Steel. And this is just a recap of all of Marvel's Cinematic Universe films, starting with Iron Man today and leading into our review of Avengers Age of Ultron sometime in May. I guess kind of to get the ball rolling, Iron Man came out in 2008. Did either of you gentlemen see it in theaters, or when was the first time you've actually seen this film?
I did not actually see it in theaters. I saw it when my dad got the DVD version and brought it home, and I'm like, what is Iron Man? Because at this point, I wasn't a fan of comic books. I didn't really know any Marvel characters besides maybe Captain America and Spider-Man. And so that was my first experience, and it really got me into the character Iron Man and thus into the Marvel Universe. So...
Well, yeah, that's a good start.
I
saw it many times in theaters. I've been a comic book fan since I was born. My dad was a comic book fan, so I read them, you know, from when I first learned how to read. I was very excited to see it in theaters. I remember it very distinctly, seeing it opening night at midnight. So, and of course, I've seen it many times since then. I own it on Blu-ray and all that fun stuff.
And as for me, I saw it first in theaters. I don't necessarily remember. It wasn't opening night. I don't necessarily do opening night for a lot of movies because whatever. It was opening weekend though, because I remember just there's certain things you get with certain crowds for these movies, certain reactions we'll get to in a bit. And I remember that much from it. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, the big thing with Nick Fury at the end was just a huge nerdgasm for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Since then, I've actually not seen this film as many times as I thought. When I rewatched it for this show, it was the first time I had seen it in probably 3 years. I think the last time I saw it was around the time the first Avengers was coming out, just to kind of do a rewatch for that film. So it's
right.
Been a while, and I think part of it is, unlike traditional movie franchises before this, it wasn't a cut and dry, like, here's Iron Man, here's Iron Man 2, here's Iron Man 3, as we'll get to in this series. There was a bunch of movies in between, so it's not like you needed to rewatch Iron Man to watch Captain America.
Right. So you only needed to watch Iron Man, well, you didn't even need to catch up for the Avengers. You didn't need to watch that movie to watch any of the other tie-in movies, like Incredible Hulk, Thor, Captain America. It was not really necessary. They didn't play into each other at all.
Yeah. And that works for better or worse. As we'll get to over the course of this little podcast franchise. But yeah, kind of kicking it off, I made some general thoughts when I was rewatching this on this past weekend. And I think the best thing about this film from the start is how it introduces all of its characters. You kind of... It's called Iron Man, so it makes sense that he's the central character, but you're almost introduced to everybody else through their relationship to Tony, played by Robert Downey Jr., and I thought that was a really fascinating way to go about it, because it instantly defines all of those characters, but more importantly, it really makes Tony a 3D character.
Anything else? You're kidding me with the hand up, right?
Is it cool if I take a picture with you?
Yes, it's very cool. All right. I don't want to see this on your MySpace page. Please, no gang signs. No, throw it up. I'm kidding. Yeah, peace. I love peace. I'd be out of a job with peace.
Yeah, you get to see the perspective of how he interacts with all the other characters, and more importantly, how they interact with him based on what they know about what kind of person he is.
Right, yeah, and I particularly appreciate how, I mean, these are all obviously comic book characters. They're, you know, in a very fantastical universe, but they were able to make all of these characters seem like real people that you would know and interact with. So I really appreciated how they were able to do that with all the secondary and tertiary characters surrounding Tony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they would become a part of the franchise as well. I mean, happy as many probably know, is played by John Favreau, who's the director of this film, which would get really interesting with the third film when he's ousted as the director, but he still plays a key character in the franchise. You know, we kind of mentioned Happy, and we mentioned Robert Downey Jr. We also had Terrence Howard as James Rhodey, who would not reprise his role in subsequent movies, but I do think...
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I do think he's better in the role than Don Cheadle would be.
Yeah, and that's not to say that he's doing a bad job, but I'm glad that they switched actors early on in between the first two movies rather than somewhere down the line, like in between Iron Man 2 and 3, when it wouldn't have made sense. But still, I like the first Rhodey better. Just a little bit.
I think the actor fits that character more. I mean, Don Cheadle, although, you know, Don Cheadle is an amazing actor, obviously. He's been in some incredible roles. But just the character of Rhodey, Don Cheadle just seems maybe too old and not as tough. I mean, Rhodey's a you know, lifelong military guy, and, you know, it just Don Cheadle just doesn't fit that character in my mind.
Yeah,
Terrence Howard has this charisma about him where he can seem like a tough guy, but he's also someone you can kind of understand Robert Downey Jr. being friends with, because he does seem to kind of be that cool laid back kid as well. But I don't necessarily think Don Cheadle ever gets to that point. He's just he's always seems like he's talking down to Tony in that regard.
Yeah, there's definitely more chemistry between Tony and Rhodey in the first film than there is in subsequent films.
Which is odd, because they're asked to do more together in 2 and 3.
Exactly. It kind of doesn't make sense, but...
It is what it is. You also have Jeff Bridges as Obadiah Stane, who... I was kind of iffy on the rewatch. I thought that they did a good job establishing Stane as a, you know, kind of a nemesis. But by the time you get to the end and he turns into the Ironmonger, I was just like, I was tapped out on him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he worked well as like the evil businessman, but like once he went full on evil suit, and yeah, that was just kind of
yeah, definitely in the third what's the term
third act.
Yes, that's what I was like, arc, whatever. The third act, he kind of, for me, kind of jumped the shark. Like, he just went full mustache twirling villain, kind of just instantly. So that kind of,
yeah, it was a sharp change.
Yeah, it was a sharp change. I definitely enjoyed his character, though, in the build-up, just kind of seeing the relationship between him and Tony, and then, you know, kind of them touching on the history of, you know, Obadiah and his relationship with Tony's father. That was definitely interesting to see. But yeah, once he got in the Ironmonger suit, and just, it was very jarring to see that change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the other thing, and we'll get to Pepper Potts in a second. The other thing is, I rewatching this, I forgot that there was a quote unquote other bad guy for most of this film. Raza, who's the guy who captures Tony at the start of the film, because like, he captures Tony at the start of the film, and he remains a presence throughout the film, but he doesn't remain a presence throughout the rest of the film. If that makes sense, like he's just kind of there, and then he's off unceremoniously because they need Stane to become the big bad of the film. I'm like, I don't get the point of keeping him around beyond that initial escape sequence.
I will give you these designs as a gift. And in turn, I hope you'll repay me with a gift of Iron Soldiers. Technology. It's always been your Achilles heel in this part of the world.
Yeah, I think it would have been a lot simpler if they had just not done any focus on him and had rather put more time on Obadiah Stane's movement from the sort of evil businessman more into the Ironmonger.
Yeah, I feel like that whole character could have been completely removed, and it would have been just fine, because, I mean, you think about when Tony's initially captured, I don't know the name of the actor, but the first bad guy, I think he had like some facial hair and whatnot. Not the bald guy who we're all discussing right now, but mm-hmm. the first guy that comes in and talks to him and tells him that he wants, you know, him to do the Jericho missile and all that. That's really, to me, was like the main bad guy in those first two acts. And really, the bald guy, again, I forget his name, but he just didn't seem necessary.
Yeah, Raza. And again, yeah, it's like, and the whole point was, I think it was an end for comic fan because he eats the Ten Rings, which would have gone on to the Mandarin, but they do something different with that even. So it's kind of a setup that doesn't really get a payoff anymore.
Yeah,
so,
right.
I mean, in hindsight, I guess they need to pad out the film a bit more. But yeah, I was like, I was watching it, and I'm like, it's not like Tony even interacts with him once he escapes anymore. He just becomes a thing they cut to every so often, and then he's out by Stan when he needs to become, like, when they need to tell you he's the big bad of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I mean, obviously, I understand why that group was necessary to kind of show that Obadiah is behind it all. But again, that particular character, I guess I see what they were trying to do with just introducing him to please the fans, but it was just completely unnecessary to have him in there at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was long dragged out, his whole little story arc that ended, like you said, unceremoniously, so.
Yes. And the big female presence of this film, really the only one whose name I actually remember, because she's a big character, is Gwyneth mm-hmm. Paltrow as Pepper Potts. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, everybody talks about Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark's hold in this film, but I don't think if he didn't have Gwyneth Paltrow's Pepper Potts, it would have been as fun. I really love the dynamic in these films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely a real chemistry between Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow in any movie that they appear together as those roles. It's just amazing how well they get along and interact, and you can see, just in the early parts of their conversations in the first movie, a long history of this has been going on for a while. This isn't something that we need to really catch on to for a while. We just know it's been there.
Yeah, and it's also something that I think is important in establishing Tony, because a lot of people kind of give him his way because he's this brilliant scientist, and it makes sense, but Pepper's there to kind of call him on his crap more often than not throughout this film, and mm-hmm. she's kind of the one who gives him the spirit arc reactor to remind him that he is human and he does have a heart, and kind of jumping way ahead. I also find it funny that she's also the one who's responsible for killing the villain in this film, because I forgot that she did that, because she's also responsible for killing the villain in Iron Man 3, so he gets her to do all of his dirty work.
That's funny. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That's totally true. She is the one that takes out both of those guys. Yeah, one thing I appreciated, not just about Pepper, but about all of the surrounding characters, is that they all complete Tony Stark in a way. Like, I feel like Pepper is kind of the heart of Tony. And then, you know, you have Rhodey as well, who is kind of like the responsible side of him and kind of pushes that. So it's like every character surrounding him is a piece of almost that one character. They all kind of come together like that.
Yeah, and I think that...
Go on. Oh, I was just saying, also I appreciate that all of the people closest to Tony don't take any of his crap. Like, you know, yeah. They all kind of, like, see right through his whole, you know, playboy facade.
Well, they have to take some of his crap because they also write... Well, I don't think his... Like, unlike Batman, Tony Stark revels in being rich and famous. I don't think there's any doubt in that. I mean, we kind of established that with his... You know, the start, he's getting a grand award, and it's like a know-nothing award for him, so he's in the casino paying craps. And mm-hmm. he goes home with the reporter, and right. He's at the party later on. He doesn't remember her name. I quoted yeah. this during the, because, you know, there's this whole thing where he hasn't been seen in a while. And he goes to a party, and some random lady in the crowd says, "Hey, do you remember me?" He's like, "Sure don't." And I'm like, "This is that, that encompasses the character completely, because he enjoys being a playboy. Unlike Batman, who pretends to be a playboy, Tony Stark is this character. There's mm-hmm. no like, oh, this is Iron Man and this is Tony Stark. Tony Stark is Iron Man." And I mean, yeah. That's literally what he establishes at the end of the film when he announces it to the world.
Right. Well, I mean, not to get too off path, but you know, in reference to Batman, Batman is the character, and Bruce Wayne is kind of the mask, and however in this regard, Tony Stark is the character, and Iron Man is the mask in that case. Like, or I don't even know if it's necessarily the mask. It's just a different aspect of his personality that he doesn't, that he's, I guess, finding as mm-hmm. as it goes on. He's becoming more of this noble hero.
Yeah, I don't necessarily, I don't think it's a mask because it's not like he tries to hide it. I mean, Pepper walks in on him. He tells Rhodey, granted, he has to tell Rhodey when they're trying to shoot him down.
Right.
And then at the end of the movie, he announces it at a press conference that he is Iron Man.
Well, good, because that would be outlandish and fantastic. I'm just not the hero type, clearly, with this laundry list of character defects, all the mistakes I made, largely public. The truth is, I am Iron Man.
So, it's not, you know, like Batman hides his secret identity. Iron Man wants to be Iron Man. It's why he, it's his ego's in it. He wants to be seen as this this great hero.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
That's a fun part of this film. What did you think of the action?
Well, I really did like, it's not really so much of the action part. I really liked the part where Tony is trying to master his suit, like not only when he actually builds the Mark II, but when he's just experimenting with, like, okay, I'm going to test out my my rocket boots, and then we watch him flip and hit the ceiling and fall back down, and he gets fire extinguished, and then he decides to make flight stabilizers. I think I think all that was pretty seamless. Him transitioning from different parts of the suit, and then he has it, the Mark II already, and, you know, takes it for a test flight, and I think that scene looked pretty nice, you know, especially when he's going up into the upper atmosphere and freezes and starts falling. I thought that was interesting in how they played that into the later ultimate battle between him and Obadiah. So,
Speaking of that freezing thing, I did have a bit of an issue with that. Like, the whole point, you know, so in that final battle, he flies up, you know, with Obadiah, and Obadiah's suit freezes and then crashes to the earth. And then a couple minutes later, Obadiah's back. It's like,
he's fine.
I thought he just fell from, like, orbit. Like, why is he okay? So,
yeah, that was a bit of a interesting plot hole, but
it basically made that whole part just completely pointless. Like, you know, they're fighting at this building, and then they go through that whole thing, and then they're fighting on this building. It's like, it's just why did we do all that for no real reason?
Yeah, it was an unnecessary interlude.
Because nothing changes in his suit. It's not because eventually he pulls out his targeting system, but that's something he does manually.
Well, the only thing that changes is in Iron Man's suit that he runs out of power because of the flight. You know, you know, that's so basically, not only was it useless, it was counterintuitive because it ended up hindering him, you know, himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think about it that way, but you are absolutely right. It was kind of one of those scenes where it's like, aha, the hero gets a moment, but in the grand scheme, it didn't really do anything. Nothing changed in Tony's favor in that regard.
No, the opposite. Yeah, the opposite. It screwed him over.
Yeah, I was going to say that by the time the final fight came, I was like, it seems so out of place in this movie. I understand that it has to be Iron Man versus some guy in a costume, but like most of the film's action sequences had kind of been more Iron Man centric. You mentioned the part where he's testing out the suit. There's the part where he goes to the terrorist cell to kind of take them out, and then there's the chase afterwards. And all of that was kind of more fun, high energy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to the final fight sequence, and it's like, okay, this is Transformers Night. It's two giant metal things knocking cars into each other and throwing up buildings and stuff like that. I didn't think it was that great. It just kind of seemed like it wasn't a downer note to end the film on, because the next scene, I think, does a much better job of kind of ending the scene on the movie on a happy note. But it was just kind of like, it was there. I guess they needed it, but it wasn't anything special.
Yeah, I think you just perfectly summed it up. It wasn't special, but they definitely needed it to sort of remind people that, like, hey, this is a superhero movie, because you know, Iron Man fighting the terrorist cell, flying around, you know, getting chased by jets. That's interesting, but it's not the core of what kind of role Iron Man plays in the Marvel Universe ultimately. So I like how they had all that stuff and that they did that stuff better than the final fight, but they needed it to introduce the whole idea of these comic book heroes and villains fighting each other.
Yeah, I could almost see just all the producers just sitting at a table just being like, all right, well, we got to have a giant bad guy versus good guy fight scene, even though it doesn't really make much sense because, I mean, really, what was Obadiah hoping to do at that point? Because it's like you're completely busted. Everybody's found out. So now you're just going to go have a fight with Iron Man for whatever reason. You should probably try to escape, dude.
That reminded me of another. I had no idea what his end game was because, like you said, Pepper finds out. He informs the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, who weren't S.H.I.E.L.D. at the time. He knows people are onto him, so he was going to kill Tony, kill these people, and then people are not going to know it's him.
Right.
Like, I didn't know, like, I guess his plan was to make more money, even though I didn't see that Stark Industries wasn't making a ton of money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Again, it was just, as you guys mentioned, that they had to have that fight scene, so it was kind of like, you know, well, this is what we got to do now. Bad guy versus good guy. Big robot versus bigger robot.
Yep.
I also find it weird that he keeps all of his secret evil plans on his computer or keeps them on a shared computer network drive that Pepper's able to find.
Definitely.
Like, yeah. That was a little sloppy.
You keep them here just in case anybody wants to find evidence on me.
Yeah, why would you even keep that? Like, especially the video of them
exactly.
The ransom note thing, and it's like, why wouldn't you just delete that, dude? Why are you keeping that at all?
Yeah, why did he still have all that stuff? He didn't need that after the terror cell was destroyed and Tony came back. Like, it was just pointless.
No, and it was
like, drag it to the recycle bin.
It wasn't even on his computer. It was on a shared drive because he accessed Tony's computer. So that means not only did he keep it, but he decided, okay, I'm just going to put this on a shared drive. Nobody's going to find it, but it's going to be out here in case somebody wants to dig around. So I guess that brings me to the next question. Was there anything in this film that you didn't like, or just kind of, like, this stuff is kind of more pet peeves and jokes and stuff, but was there anything that you didn't like at all?
There's nothing, like, really glaring about the movie that I didn't like at all, but I feel like it could have been either shortened or more, like, focus put on certain things. Because it had, like, the whole beginning part was great with when Tony was actually in captivity and what he had to do in order to survive. But some of the other stuff throughout the movie I felt was just a little bit belabored. Not that it's useless stuff. It was just a little bit long. And ultimately, like we've been discussing, how it kind of like Obadiah Stane just becomes this random arch villain. Some of that time could have been used to show his change instead of some more little nonsense stuff.
Yeah, I think it wasn't a big part, but I guess they needed it again to kind of have Stane come in and out of the film. But like, the whole subplot with like him being ousted at his company by the board of directors and stuff like that kept on coming in and out, but it didn't have a grand, because ultimately it was just for Stane to say, haha, it was me who did this to you. And it's like, yeah, we could have cut that 10 minutes you dedicated to him repeatedly telling Tony that he's fighting for him and this and that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there wasn't anything that I specifically just hated about the movie, but there were definitely a few things that they could have changed. I feel like the villains in general, just really overall in most Marvel movies, tend to be a bit weak, save for maybe Loki. But, you know, so I think the villains needed a bit more development. I would have liked to see maybe some history from Obadiah, like maybe some flashbacks showing when he started to turn. So that would have been interesting to kind of get some story on that.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that, there was definitely a couple of things that we mentioned earlier that they could have cut out specifically with the villains, as far as with that one bald guy that I'm never going to remember his name, no matter how many times you guys say it.
Honestly, I don't remember his name from the movie. I only remember it because I have the Wikipedia page open to talk about this stuff. Because I don't even know if it's said in the actual film.
Yeah, so there's definitely some stuff that could have been cut out, for sure. And at the same time, I would have liked to seen a little more development in Obadiah's character, a little more backstory to kind of see at what point in history did he become who he is, and as corrupt as he is. So aside from that, though, I can't really think of any other negatives. I mean, overall, I thought it was a very, very good film.
Yeah,
and a very, definitely. Very important film for Marvel as a production company. I mean, you know, prior to this, they hadn't done anything through their own production company. Everything, all the only things that they had done were, you know, X-Men, which is of course done through Fox. And I'm trying to think, was there anything else of merit?
Spider-Man,
I don't think so.
Fantastic Four.
Well, no, Spider-Man's
Sony.
Yeah, Spider-Man's Sony.
And
Fantastic
and
Four.
They did the
Fox.
Fox.
They did the Hulk movie. I think that was them.
I believe so. I mean, yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to look that up, but...
Well, we know it's non-canon, so...
Oh, it's non-canon, but...
So. Hulk was Universal. The Ang Lee Hulk was Universal.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the first actual Marvel, you know, movie. So, I mean, it was very, very important for them, and I think they really nailed it, especially with tying it to... you know, what's going on in the world today and at that time, and this was 2008, but just,
yeah.
I know, it's very...
That does remind me, I kind of joked, and it was kind of dated for a lot of movies, but yeah, the movie starts with him making reference to, like, MySpace and taking pictures, like, taking selfies with somebody else, taking a picture, and I'm like, now that's, it's been, oh, what, 6 or 7 years, and now that stuff is kind of antiquated now. I don't know anybody who keeps a MySpace page anymore, and everybody uses their camera on their cell phone now to take pictures, but it was kind of funny to watch that. It's a little time capsule, because this film is less than 10 years old. But to Tony's point, our Tony, I was going to ask, you touched on this, but this was a major moment for Marvel. So, I mean, in hindsight, how do you feel this codes up in comparison to kind of building the universe, building phase one, leading up to Avengers?
I feel as a story, it certainly holds up. I definitely enjoyed going back and watching it again. I don't think it's completely necessary as a story to be where we are story-wise. As a film and as a success for the company, I think it's completely necessary. And, I mean, without this movie, we wouldn't have the Avengers or anything that's coming out at this point. So I think that it was pivotal as a business move. But the story itself is not completely necessary to be where we are today. But that said, I still greatly enjoyed it.
Yeah. I agree. It's unnecessary in the fact that you don't really need to have known what happened in that movie to follow what's currently going on in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I think that's a lot of it is because it's their first movie, just in general. It's an origin story. And the villain in that movie was ultimately defeated and so can bear no, and so can't do anything, you know, down the line. Like in some of the other movies, the villains are defeated but not killed. And you have hints at them throughout the rest. Like, you know, we never know what happened to Red Skull sort of thing. But I think that it does its job well, which is to firmly plant Marvel as a movie production company. So as a group that can actually do this, and they don't need to outsource this to Sony and Fox and these other places.
Not only can they do it, but frankly, they're doing it better than all
yes.
these other companies. You know, Sony, Fox, I mean, it, you know, if you look at just the numbers as far as how much they're making off of these films, Marvel is just crushing it, which is pretty remarkable to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, kind of to echo off of your 2 points. One of the, it's weird, because one of the reasons this is one of my favorite Marvel films is also one of the reasons why it's not necessarily a great stepping stone for the Marvel Universe, because it is pretty much a standalone film in that you get a complete story. You get the backbone of Agent Coulson, and he's in like 3 or 4 scenes, and he's building S.H.I.E.L.D., but that in itself isn't necessarily like, oh man, we're going to need this. It's something that's just kind of there, and it makes sense for the climax of this film, because Pepper and Tony need some backup. Granted, they do nothing, but they needed somebody there at the end, especially Pepper, before Iron Man came to save the day.
Mm-hmm.
But it stands alone pretty well. Like, you can watch this film, and you wouldn't necessarily need to know that there were sequels to this or that it went anywhere else, because it stands on its own. Where I think, especially with a lot of the later Phase 1 films, I find that a lot of them are just kind of like, we're building up to this movie, so we're going to have to take some of your movie screen time.
Yeah.
To really kind of build towards stuff. Even the tease at the end of this, while it would be important for the Avengers eventually, is something that they kind of ran way too far in advance, because they would have an Iron Man sequel here, and they had to get around the fact that we hadn't built the Avengers yet. And that was...
Yeah.
Yeah, as regards that teaser at the end, I mean, it's funny how, like, I can picture myself right now sitting in the theater on that midnight, and the moment that Nick Fury said Avengers Initiative, I about lost my mind. I was like, oh my, because at the time there was no real talk about them doing anything outside of this. It was just, so we're doing an Iron Man movie, and then they bring up the Avengers Initiative, and yeah, I flipped out. And it's what's funny is to see people that were unfamiliar with Iron Man, because I mean, now it's kind of hard to recognize that, because we're so inundated with all of the Marvel Universe. It's become such a big part of pop culture. But at the time, nobody knew who Iron Man was. I mean, they maybe had heard the name before, but they weren't real familiar with the character. So to see how that's changed, and how, I mean, Iron Man and Tony Stark and Stark and Robert Downey Jr., as he's connected to that, have kind of become such a big part of pop culture in the past few years is incredible, just to see the change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if it wasn't for him, if it wasn't for his portrayal of Iron Man, this whole universe would have fallen apart. He's kind of been the glue that's held this together, not just as Tony Stark, but even in the Avengers. I mean, he is the star. There's a ton of other heroes in it, but he is the star of that franchise.
Yeah, and I think that if it had been any other character that he tried to start this franchise with, like if it had been the Hulk or Thor or Captain America, yeah, it wouldn't have had the same effect because of... The other actors do a good job as the characters that they portray, but I think Robert Downey Jr., with the exception of maybe Loki, is the one character who really nails it, 100% the character.
I remember surfing the internet before this movie came out and reading the announcement that Tony Stark was going to be Iron Man, and just thinking to myself, holy crap. I mean, I'm sorry, that Robert Downey Jr. is going to be Tony Stark and therefore Iron Man. And mm-hmm. I was like, he is Iron. Like, Tony Stark and Robert Downey Jr. are almost the same person. Much like you have Chris Pratt as Star-Lord. Is like, that is basically
Chris
Pratt.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know, it's like, Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark. And so, I mean, they couldn't have picked a better actor to play him. What's going to be really interesting to see is what they do in the future as far as he's in his 50s at this point, I think. So how much longer is he going to be playing Tony Stark? Who knows?
Right.
And will they get another actor? And I just can't imagine who else could play that role.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's one of those crapshoots, because we've kind of gotten used to actors replacing other actors. You know, James Bond is famous for it. Batman's going on his 5th actor in the next 30 years. We're going to get our 3rd Spider-Man in like 15 years or something like that. So people have gotten used to it, but I don't think there's ever been a portrayal that's kind of been as iconic so quickly. Like, you can kind of talk about Christopher Reeve, Superman, and even then, it took them like 20 years to kind of recast that role.
Thinking of the Superman thing, I was going to say it took much longer than that, because Christopher Reeves was in the 60s, right? Late
70s.
60s. Early 70s, yeah.
To 80s, and then they recast Brandon Routh. And then even when they recast him, they literally just tried to have him play a poor man's Christopher Reeve.
Exactly, so, yeah. They pretty much picked him because he looked like him.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. I've done last year, I did kind of a Marvel animation thing. And it's kind of funny to see before this film, like, how Iron Man was drawn. And then since then, Iron Man has been Robert Downey Jr. in, like, everything. Like, the animated series, the comic books, it's Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think their best bet, rather than try to replace the character, I think they would stand a better chance if they kind of just backed away from Iron Man for a while and got some of their other characters in the swing of things. And I think that's what they're doing.
Yeah, see, that's kind of what the end of 3 hinted at. And then he's like, oh no, he's back in Avengers and he's back in Captain America. And then he's going to be in Avengers Part 1 and 2. So it was kind of interesting how 3 ending in that regard. Speaking of endings again, Nick Fury kind of announces the Avengers Initiative at the end of this.
Jarvis!
Welcome, Holmes.
I am Iron Man. You think you're the only superhero in the world? Mr. Stark, you become part of a bigger universe. You just don't know it yet.
Who the hell are you?
Nick Fury, Director of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh.
I'm here to talk to you about the Avenger Initiative.
But he mentions that there's other heroes in this world. And I thought that was curious in hindsight, because as far as I know, everything that's been established since then is that Iron Man is kind of the first. Like, Captain America was frozen, they thought he was dead. The Hulk isn't considered a hero. They didn't know about Thor. And I wouldn't necessarily consider Black Widow and Hawkeye the same type of hero as Iron Man.
No.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, really, who did he have in mind when he mentioned that, aside from Captain America? I mean, obviously, as we know, Captain America is considered to be the first Avenger, but...
He was dead.
Yeah, at the time, yeah.
Presumed dead. Well,
it was, at that point, it would have been, what, 70 years? I think it's a good call to make. But yeah, I was watching and I'm like, wait, who are they talking about? Because, like, Guardians of the Galaxy, those people are... Earth doesn't know about them. We've seen the origins of Cap. We've seen Thor kind of makes his presence known. Hulk isn't considered a hero. And I'm just like, who were they talking about? And, I mean, it might get into stuff with Ant-Man and stuff like that, but it was... Because that's going to be so far down the road. It's like, who did Nick Fury have in mind?
I think it's a whole hindsight is 2020 thing, where Marvel's like... Hopefully people won't watch that end scene in Iron Man, because we really didn't have our shit together at that point. So,
yeah. Or who knows, maybe there were characters at some point that they just didn't get into that are somewhere in Nick Fury's files of, you know, weird crap that happens.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who knows, there may be some superheroes or villains out there that were just haven't been introduced. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, but even in that case, kind of going back to Phase 1, it's like... Why did he bring it up to Tony if they weren't going to become part of the Avengers? Because he calls for these people in the Avengers. He calls for Cap.
Well, now, he would have known about the Hulk at this point, right? Because
He might have.
He might have known about the Hulk, but...
But
like I said, I don't think they considered a Hulk a hero, because even with the Avengers, Hulk is there... More because Ilky demands it than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And they just kind of want to keep him close in case something bad happens, which, you know, does. So, yeah. I think they might have known about the Hulk at that point. I don't think they found Captain America in the ice yet at that point. And they also didn't know about Thor. Iron Man was the only one of the big four who was established at that point as a good guy.
Well, here's a question. The first movies of, like, the first Iron Man, the first Captain America, the first Thor, maybe they're not they don't necessarily occur in that order, you know, the order in which the movies were released. Like, maybe while these things were going on, the issue with Thor was also happening. I mean, they don't really establish
They do establish a rough timeline, and that's actually a good point. Probably something we would have gotten into with Avengers. But Iron Man takes place, and The Incredible Hulk takes place. Iron Man 2 takes place during the midway point of The Incredible Hulk, because there's a scene in The Incredible Hulk, and there's a scene in Iron Man 2 where you see like the climax of The Incredible Hulk on the TV. So it all takes place after Iron Man 2 because Coulson needs to go get the hammer at the end of the film, and that's where the film kind of starts off. And then Captain America takes place. Well, Captain America doesn't matter
in the past
because it takes place in the past, but ultimately,
but the end scene when he wakes up, when is that?
I think
immediately before the Avengers.
Yeah, that's because that's where he starts with the Avengers. It's like he's back in this world and he doesn't know what to do. So yeah, there is a timeline. I think phase two gets more like they don't necessarily care about that because there's no real signs that Iron Man 3, Thor 2, or Captain America take place in any. They could take place simultaneously. They can take place within weeks of each other. There's no real sign that they take place in any period that is separate. But in phase one, it's pretty clear the timeline because these films were kind of designed in that regard.
Yeah. They wanted people who were unfamiliar with the Avengers and these characters to understand that, hey, these are connected. Hence, you know, the hashtag, it's all connected. So they're trying to, for people who don't get it, they're trying to put the pieces right in their face and be like, see, they fit.
Right. So let me ask you guys, I mean, this movie came out in 2008. And we kind of briefly touched on the action, but how do you feel specifically the CG stands up from,
I thought it held up well for the most part. There were some scenes, I think, especially when I think versus the Ironmonger, where it kind of looks dated because it kind of looks like a video game because they stand out in contrast to the environment. But other than that, I guess because it's a completely CG rendered suit, it's not like it's trying to mimic anything. Like it just kind of looks good no matter what. But there were times where, like, when they're around other humans, where it kind of stands out.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, overall, mm-hmm. I thought that CG was very good. They did use a lot of practical effects. Like, there was a practical suit built for Iron Man. There was like one or two scenes in particular. One that comes to mind right now where he was kind of suiting up, and you know, so you see the CG interacting with himself, and like the helmet coming on over his face. That looked jarring, and I was like, oh, that's weird, that doesn't fit right. I mean,
yeah.
And I was like, why don't they just give him a real helmet in that scene? But that was kind of jarring. And then also, as you mentioned, with the Ironmonger, there was some scenes there where it was a little off. But, I mean, it's to be expected for something that's 7 years old at this point. But overall, I thought it was pretty fantastic.
Well, I think that 2008 CGI for Iron Man is better than some of the computer-generated stuff we're getting these days, and just going to throw that out there. I think Iron Man CG was better than a lot of what the Hobbit movies had to offer in terms of believability and realism, especially,
well,
yeah.
I think that the Hobbit films also have a lot more to deal with, where this is you really need Iron Man to be CG and later on Ironmonger.
Mm-hmm.
As everything, I mean, even in his rest of the films, there isn't really a ton of heavy CG. I guess you can say that with the extremist characters in Iron Man 3. But yeah. Like Whiplash in the next one is pretty much a human in like a He-Man costume.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I guess to kind of wrap this up, final thoughts on Iron Man. I think we all kind of agree that we'd recommend, but, I mean, is there anything in particular you two want to say?
No, I think that a recommendation to go see the movie, especially if you have seen the other, like if you've seen the Avengers and you haven't seen Iron Man yet, I think you should see Iron Man. If you haven't seen any of the movies yet, then you should definitely, I think you should start off with Iron Man just to see where it all began. And also just don't get used to the character Rhodey if you do watch the movie because he changes. That's it.
I think there are definitely other comic book movies that I enjoy more than Iron Man. However, I feel like this would be probably the best place for someone to start who isn't really into comic books.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the fact, as we mentioned before, that it ties so well into real life events. And the characters are, although it's a bit fantastical, it's also tied to reality, and so it's easy for someone to get into who may not be into these things. So I highly recommend it. Overall, it's one of my favorite comic book movies of all time, so I highly recommend it.
And this is an odd one. I think if you I mean, I think anybody who listens to this is probably the same as us, the nerds who are going to rewatch this anyhow. But I think like, if you didn't have to rewatch, if you weren't doing a marathon, this film is such a standalone that you can recommend watching it just to enjoy it. But if you wanted to watch a vital film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, this doesn't necessarily feel like that. Like, there's nothing here that you need to see to understand anything that comes after it, other than that Nick Fury shows up at the end. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you want to just pick, like, if you wanted to just do a mini marathon of, like, key films from Marvel Cinematic Universe, this wouldn't be one. But as Tony said, if you wanted to find one of the better comic book films and one of my favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe films, this is an easy recommend. We will be back next week with the... I am curious to hear your thoughts on The Incredible Hulk. I feel like one of the...
Oh, yeah.
One of the more divisive films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So, for Tony, Scott, and myself, this has been our Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast for Iron Man 1.